Chell Anderson is a naturalist and plant ecologist. She joins us periodically to talk about phenology or what's going on in the woods right now. Welcome, Chell.
Merry, Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you. Well, one of those holiday traditions, particularly New Year's, is kissing under the mistletoe, but mistletoe isn't all that friendly a plant.
Oh, no. I guess, you know, it's got a dual personality in the case of those kissing mistletoes, which, by the way, do not grow at our latitude.
No, they don't. We have a thing called, what is it? Is it called mistletoe here?
Yeah, it's called Eastern Dwarf Mistletoe.
Okay.
Is the only mistletoe we have in Minnesota.
Now, do those have white bud berries on it like the other stuff?
No, they do get berries, but different and not so leafy. So the kissing mistletoe, which doesn't grow here and is the traditional mistletoe for that purpose, is leafy. So it's also referred to as a leafy mistletoe. Our mistletoe is very unique and interesting parasitic plant that's a part of our forest. The dwarf mistletoe that we have, is most common on black spruce, and it's actually can be a pretty serious pest, causing, you know, mortality over time in large areas. But it can also occur occasionally on white spruce or tamarack, and really not nearly as often, but you can also sometimes find it on white pines or jack pine, red pine. I mean, but it primarily is something one would notice most often on black spruce. And just a fascinating plant with a really interesting life cycle.
Oh, what's it look like?
Let's kind of go through the year. So in the spring, those mistletoe plants, which have managed to develop over the span of 2 or 3 years inside the woody part of the tree, finally are able to put out some aerial shoots, and they're yellow to orange to brown. They're only about a half inch to an inch high. And those aerial shoots burst out of the twigs of the tree, and they are either male flowered or female flowered. So mistletoe plants are dioecious, so they are either female flowers or male flowers, not both. So over the course of the summer, the flowers develop, and if they've been pollinated by insects or wind, the female flowers will develop fruits, which then grow throughout the summer. And in the fall, they fill with fluid. They take on a tremendous amount of fluid, such that eventually, when they're ready, they burst open and throw their seeds out at speeds of up to 50 miles an hour.
Ouch!
Fortunately, they're small. And you know, so they may go 20 or more feet. So as they are sent off into the world, instead of like most seeds having a hard seed coat, we've talked about the value of hard seed coats in the past, they actually have, the seeds are covered by a vicin, which is a real sticky, gluey kind of covering, so that wherever they land, they stick. So you can imagine if you're up in the upper part of a spruce tree, black spruce tree, and the seeds burst out and they go flying all around. Well, they can land on all kinds of other spruce needles or twigs or other species. They can also, once they've burst out, can either be picked up by or actually land on, if a bird is in the wrong place at the wrong time, land on a bird who then, you know, will carry it around until it's preened off. And then it can be dispersed in that way too, so the seeds can get around pretty well. Then they have another novel adaptation, which is that unlike most of our seeds, when they germinate, they do not grow towards the light. Their impulse is to grow away from the light. So wherever they land, their radical, that's the initial sprout that comes out of the seed, is looking to get away from the light. So it will move along the surface it's on, and if it's in a place where it can find a little wedge in the bark or the base of a needle, of a spruce needle, or something like that, it makes a hold fast. So this is just a group of cells that really stick to that spot, and from there it sends the radical down into the plant tissue, and that then creates what's called a haussatorial system, which is a term used for these kinds of plants, a network of root-like structures that allow it to absorb nutrients and moisture from the host plant. So now that root system or that root-like system is in the host plant for 2 to 3 years, living there, developing there, until finally it's matured enough that it can then send out those aerial shoots that we talked about starting up in the spring again. So it's a 4 to 5 year period of growth. Once the fruits develop in the fall, the shoots fall off. So they're really, that visible presence of the mistletoe is really very short-lived. So we mostly identify it by the witch's broom that it creates. So by penetrating the plant tissue, it upsets the hormone balance in the plant tissue. And that's why we get all those multiple growths of twigs and branches at a point of contact that makes the witch's broom. So it's not the mistletoe stems and so on that we see and identify as the witch's broom. It's the response of the plant that we're seeing that creates the witch's broom. And if you're there at just the right time to look, you could eventually see the little aerial shoots and the fruit flowers and the fruits. But most of the time, they're hidden. The witch's brooms can be great places for birds, some birds' nests. And another interesting thing that's been observed about mistletoe-infected trees is that all the branches of the witch's broom tend to open their buds quite a bit earlier than the uninfected branches of the tree. And so that can really tends to attract insects to the sugars and things that are offered by those fresh buds, which in turn make for great early foraging places for birds.
So we won't be kissing underneath the witch's broom, but it still is a good thing.
Oh, go ahead.
I don't think it's quite the same. Jill Anderson regularly updates us with the goings-on in our woods and waters. Thanks for bringing us up to date on mistletoe, the kind we have here.
You're so welcome.